Welcome to This Week in, what is it? It's not that I forgot that it's sparkling water, it's that my brain shut down mid-sentence there. Welcome to This Week in Sparkling Water. I'm dealing with a lot of feelings of inadequacy. I'm dealing with a lot of feelings of slowness of brain and this other feeling that, I don't know what the name for it is, but it's when you feel like you have to always be entertaining. And you have anxiety because you think people are going to... Fear of being boring. I'm dealing with a lot of fear of being boring. And fear of being boring is... God, I'm so anxious right now. Fear of being boring is a big part of the origin story of the podcast because that fear really held me back from getting sober because I felt like if I get sober, people are going to think I'm boring. I'm not going to have like this zany, interesting energy anymore. I'm not going to be this like riled up, clownish, very entertaining fella who I am when I'm wasted. And the podcast was me saying, okay, so I'm going to be boring now. I'm going to sit here in front of a microphone and I'm going to be boring for all to see, and that's okay because I don't owe anything to anyone. I don't have to be entertaining. That's a misunderstanding. Like at some point I started believing that I always have to be entertaining, and that belief is like not right. So I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to talk about a bunch of things that are like really boring. And everyone's going to think that's boring, and that's okay. So first, I woke up today and I was like, I had this plan that I was going to just check my email real quick and go outside and move my car because I'm parked illegally. I'm parked across the street where you need a parking permit because it's the only spot I could find last night. I was going to move my car before I get a ticket because I'm at risk of getting a parking ticket. And then I was going to record a podcast right after. And so I step outside, and first of all, I step outside, and in the 40 feet of walking to my car, I run into a fella that we hired at the Lark, who basically didn't work out, which is like such a small town. I don't know. It's like the first little embryonic thing of what I always try to run away from. It's not bad yet. It doesn't matter. Because we didn't have a bad falling out with this guy. It was just like, we hired him and I sat him down a bunch of times and I'm talking to him real serious about how we need like a lot in terms of performance, and you have to absorb a ton of information and you have to really fucking study and you have to really perform. And there's like quizzes every day and there's a study program and you have to excel at the study program if you want to proceed. And he was like, yeah, that's what we'll do. And then he didn't do it and he just stopped showing up. And that's all well and good because he was a grown up and he made a decision. And I was a grown up and I was doing my job and I made my decisions and it's all good, you know? But it's like, oh man, give this 2 years and I'm gonna have had these low grade negative experiences with dozens of people, and I'll run into them all the time and I'll be like, I gotta move from Santa Barbara. So then I go to find my car and I have a parking ticket, $55 parking ticket. And as I discover this parking ticket on my windshield, I like take a moment to stop and I just stand there and I just sit with it and I introspect and I like look inward and I look at my own emotions and I look at, so what is happening to my emotions right now? And I find it so interesting, like the relationship between money and mood. Like two episodes ago, I did this episode called Joachim is in a Bad Mood, and I was really just trying to talk the whole episode about how I don't know where the bad mood is from, and I just find that infinitely interesting, how we don't know where our own moods are from. And I talked about money a little bit in that episode, but like the money, I don't even, how does the body know what money is? Like how do our emotions know so deeply what money is? Like why is money, because money didn't exist in a sort of, because like money doesn't exist in the animal kingdom. You know what I'm saying? Money doesn't exist pre-civilization. So how is it that money hits us so deep? How is money connected to our deepest emotions? That's very confusing to me. And so I get this parking ticket and I'm looking at my own emotions. And it's like, there's no, it doesn't matter if I tell myself, hey, a $55 parking ticket does not change anything about your life. There's no reason to now feel like life isn't going great. Like 30 seconds ago, you thought life was going all right. And now you think life isn't going great. That's just like factually not true. The $55 parking ticket does not actually alter your timeline. It does not alter your like trajectory in life. It's just $55. And it's, but it does not help. It does not change anything to tell myself that. And I'm just in a bad mood. I'm just like, fuck, well, this sucks. And you know what I'm always reminded of when I try to think about this and try to unpack this? It's like 15 years ago, me and Dave were living together in Shanghai and we would play poker. I mean, I swear to God, we played poker every day for like years. And sometimes we'd start, just him and me, start up a game in the afternoon. God, I love poker. We'd start up a game of heads up in the afternoon. And then people would trickle into the apartment and we'd just play and drink beer and smoke weed all evening playing poker. And then, you know, 4 a.m. rolls around and we would just not stop. Sometimes we just, I swear to God, sometimes we play poker for 24. I swear to God, there were some 24-hour poker games. I love poker, dude. And you know why I love poker? Because there's money in poker and the money is emotions. The money is bound up in your emotions. It's like, I love poker because it's an emotional journey. And you can't not go on the journey. Like, there's no way to tell yourself, oh, it doesn't matter that I lost or it doesn't matter that I won. I'm not going to feel anything about it because you're going to feel something about it. And I remember just sitting, thinking about this while playing poker and looking at people and looking at how people just fully change. In the sense that, like, they win four hands in a row and they now have a lot of chips and they might be like the chip leader or whatever, they have the most. And their whole thing is like, now they have a lot of energy and they're just really happy and their brain has this fluidity to it. The conversation for them has this fluidity to it. Like, they can very easily think of topics to talk about. They're just talking about stuff in this fluid, entertained and entertaining way where there's just this lightness to them where they just like want to conversate and they want dialogue and everything is just like a funny, jokey conversation for them. And they have all this energy and then they lose three hands in a row or they lose one big hand. They just lose one big hand and they lose 80% of their chips. They're not out. They're still in the game. They're still playing. And then now, all of a sudden, it's like they just have no energy and people tell hilarious jokes and they just cannot laugh at jokes. And it's like the crazy thing is that we weren't playing for a lot of money. We weren't good at poker. We weren't even focused on poker. We were all drunk. Like, we were all wasted and we weren't being like, poker was no priority. Poker had absolutely no priority for us. Like, if poker had priority, we would have been like, okay, I'm going to be sober for this. I'm going to really focus. I'm going to like read a book on poker. I'm going to do some calculation. None of that happened. It was just, we're hanging out and poker is happening in the background. But you lose 80% of your chips in one hand. And then now all of a sudden you're quiet. You can't think of anything to say. People try to dialogue with you and it's like pulling teeth. It's like, there's just this like heaviness to every single thought in your brain where it's like they ask you stuff and there's just like no flow to the conversation. And I remember just being like looking at people and see the rise and fall of them over and over and over and just being like, how is it that we can't? And I'm saying this as if it doesn't apply to me. It 100% applies to me. The exact same thing happened to me. And it's not like there's a way to shut it off. Okay, now I was interrupted because I could hear the voice of the fella who I hired and then he didn't work out because he's right outside of my apartment. And I immediately become paranoid that he is going to, that he can hear that I'm talking about him. But the window is closed, I think. Anyway, let's try a sparkling water here. So today's flavor is tropical ponche. I don't even know how it's pronounced. De la calle Tepache, fermented taste of Mexico. I love these de la calles. I love the spicy one. Let's smell it. Wow, that smells like a gummy bear. That smells like a small batch, handcrafted, fresh ingredient, made to order, fresh out of the fucking pork knuckle, gummy bear. Okay, let's taste it. Oh my God, that's spectacular. It's like a gummy bear, and then mid-palate, it hits you with this spice blend of like cinnamon and nutmeg, just like these fun root spices. You know, the root beer blend, but just super, not root beer blend, because then you think I'm talking about toothpaste flavors. No, I'm talking about cola flavors. The powdery components of cola. Man, these things don't miss, because it's like a juicy, gummy, orange, perfect gummy bear with a fun complexity to it. That's spectacular. That's a 10 out of 10 for sure. Okay, so I'm going to keep going with just, I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about. And it's boring. It's not just boring. It's also embarrassing. Because right now I'm about to talk about rappers and AI, and but like both of those things are just being being a white guy with a podcast talking about rap music and AI is not allowed. That's that stuff we don't like, but I need to worry about that stuff less. So I just have to break free of the prison of what. The prison of what I think I... Anyway, whatever. I don't even need to explain it to you guys. Okay, here's something I've been thinking about. All the biggest rappers, they now hate each other. As of 2 weeks ago, they hate each other. The Drake and the 21 Savage and the Kendrick Lamar and the Travis Scott and all these, the biggest names in rap music or whatever, now they hate each other. And on one level, that's just interesting because human conflict is interesting. Like when you have a people who spend a bunch of time together and then you get them separately and they tell you that they hate each other, it's just, that's like a very pure form of gossip that it's very hard to look away. I mean, it is arguably what all reality television show is, that you film people spending a bunch of time together in a room and then you get them in a confessional booth, you interview them individually and they talk shit about each other and it's like impossible to look away. So like on one level, it's just interesting, which is why that this always happens in rap music, because they don't really have anything to talk about. It's just a beat that you have to talk over and you need so many words. So you need some kind of substance. So they make up these conflicts between each other. So they like really lean into how they hate each other. And you listen to some of these songs and it's clear that they actually hate each other, which makes it actually interesting. Like on a an exploitative, voyeuristic maybe is the word I'm looking for. It feels very voyeuristic. So you have people like Rick Ross and Drake. And these dudes have, I mean, I think they've probably made 40 songs together. And now they're making these songs where they are saying, they're making really, really negative, horrible statements about each other. And you can tell that they really hate each other. And there's this incredible sense of urgency and pace that makes it, that ratchets up the pressure and makes it even more interesting. Like Drake put out this song where he talked shit about 10 different people. And then 2 hours later, Rick Ross came out with a song responding to all the stuff in that song. So he clearly was told about the, he clearly got a phone call or a text from someone immediately when the song came out. And then he spends 30 minutes preparing and then he goes in and he records his 5 minute song and the song is out 2 hours later. So it's like that speed of it is very, makes it like, ooh, gives it a real sense of like happeningness. Feels like something's happening, like you're following an evolving thing, which makes it very interesting, right? And then it's a big back and forth. They make statements about each other. They respond to those statements. They make really mean statements. Famously, the meanest, biggest, baddest statement that anyone ever made is how... So Drake apparently secretly had a child And he had a child with a stripper, and the stripper wasn't very pretty. And so he had unprotected sex with a stripper, and she got with an ugly stripper, and she got pregnant, and he had a kid with her. And he didn't tell anyone about the kid because he was embarrassed by how the girl wasn't pretty. And then Pusha T made a song dissing Drake, telling the world about this child. It's just like the best fucking gossip in the whole universe, being like, you got a fucking child that you don't want to tell anyone about just because the girl's ugly? It's like so humiliating, so rude, so fucking rude. Anyway, that sort of thing always happens in rap music. It's what is always going to happen because it's interesting. And then the thing that's different now, because it's 2024, is that there's a lot of AI-generated content mixed in. Most of these songs are real songs in the sense that they were actually written by someone in the camp of the rapper, and the rapper, or the rapper themselves. Probably a lot of these songs, the rappers write their own songs. And then it's their actual voice. But it's not all real. And it's hard to tell what's real because these songs are, they're not real songs. Like, they don't come, it's not like a record label puts out a CD with a song on or on Spotify or something. It's just like a snippet that's leaked to someone and then uploaded to YouTube. So all these songs are appearing really quickly on YouTube where all these people are responding to each other's negative statements. And because it's 2024 and because some of these statements are really extreme, the comment section is just people being like, Jesus Christ, is this AI? Did he actually just say that about him, or is this AI? So on a civilian level, on the people level, everyone is like, Jesus Christ, is this real or is this AI? But on an artist level, up there, what's surprising to me is for them, that's not part of the conversation. They are not, and it's surprising in the sense that I would expect, if you have conflict and everyone is a rational actor, I would expect them to be like, oh, so that guy said all those things about me, all those negative things about me. Before I respond, I would be like, is that real? Did he actually say all that shit about me? Or was some of that AI generated? But that's not how they're doing it. And my sense is that it's because pride is involved, because pride and ego is involved, that changes things to where it doesn't actually matter if it's real or not. Where these statements are out there in the world and they have the name of the guy on them. Like the guy that I hate, his name is on this thing and it's the thing is making these statements. So it doesn't actually matter. I'm humiliated. So it doesn't matter if it's AI generated or not. It's a very interesting realization to me. And it's not that these rappers don't know about AI-generated content. They absolutely know. It's part of what they do. Because, interestingly, Drake even put out a song that's like fucking... no context, didn't say anything about it, just uploaded to his own YouTube a song where the voice of Tupac Shakur talks shit about Kendrick Lamar. So it's clearly like someone used generative AI to copy and understand and map out the voice of Tupac Shakur. And then Drake probably wrote the song and feeds it into the computer and it spits out this song with the voice of Tupac talks shit about Kendrick. So they all clearly know about AI, but it's just that it doesn't actually matter what's real. And that's interesting to me because all of this foreshadows politics. I think in the next 10 years, that's what politics will become. Global politics and conflict. Like at some point in the next 10 years, we'll have a situation where like Russia, the leaders of Russia, Putin and the leaders of Russia make statements about India. In India and the like government of India and the spokespeople of India and the premier of India, they make statements back and they make like video statements, press releases, where they criticize each other for stuff and they respond to the criticism and they quickly like go back and forth and they make statements about each other. And some of those statements will be third party actors trying to control the thing and control it by putting out AI generated content. And it and the people will not stop and be like, wait, is this real? Putin will not stop and say, did India really say that about me? Because it won't matter. Because even if India didn't say those things, the statements are still out there and they still have India's label on it. So you have to respond to it. And you have to act as if it's real, even if it's not real. And I've never thought about that before, but I think that's completely true. And I think that's completely how things will play out. And I think it's kind of bad because it means that it's like an irrational ratcheting up of things that we will not be able to avoid in many conflicts. Because in all these conflicts where there's ego involved, if you hurt my feelings, it doesn't matter if it wasn't you, I still have to nuke you. Because otherwise I look like a bitch. It's like these rappers are making these songs and some of the statements that they're responding to are not actually made by the person. They're just like AI songs that are mixed in. Because there's literally like thousands of new AI songs appearing every day now from all the biggest artists. And some of them are really good. And it's also like really muddy. Like, what is an AI song? Does it mean that the words were written by? Actually, the AI still cannot write the words. I've never had, that's generally accepted that the AI still cannot come up with cool sounding words, but the AI can come up with voices. Yeah, anyway, so that's like me, a white guy, talking on a podcast about rap music and rappers and artificial intelligence and politics, and all of those things are like really, really lame on a podcast. Like, all of that's really, really lame, and we shouldn't do stuff like that. But I have to just break out of the prison of the of like what I think I should be doing, and I have to just relax. And if I'm interested in stuff, I have to just be with myself about the stuff. And I have to just be okay with no one listening to it. And then also some of those rap songs are just fire, dude. Because you can tell that they're so amped up. Oh, God. Some of those. And it's just so, you cannot look away. They clearly hate each other. I really like Travis Scott. He has such a vibey sound. Anyway, I've just had a really hard week again. And I always do. And what's hard about it is just that I'm sensitive. And I'm in a position professionally where I have to just have really thick skin. And it's funny, man. I remember 2 years ago when I got hired at Holbrook as a server, almost 3 years ago. And then after a while, I was given this like supervisor position. And then after a few months after that, almost 2 years ago now, I was approached by this guy who was the boss of the company at the time. His name was Treg, fucking really good guy. Him in London, they sat me down and they were like, do you maybe want to be a restaurant manager here at Holbrook? And we had this really, really great conversation about it where I just really got to voice all these different real thoughts I was having about like why I wouldn't want to do it or why I would want to do it. And one of the big things I talked about is like, I'm really sensitive and I'm really non-confrontational. Like, I don't want to have hard conversations with people. I don't want to start conflict. I want to avoid conflict. And then Treg was like, actually, for management, we are looking for things like that. Conflict is not good. Like, we should often find paths of least resistance. We should present things in peaceful ways. I want non-confrontational peace people in management positions. And I was like, dude, if you're going to say that to me, I'm going to believe you. And I'm going to take the job and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it and I'm going to do the whole thing in a non-confrontational way. And so that's what I did. And now 2 years later, it's like, Jesus Christ, there's a lot of conflict. And like, I just had this day, like on Sunday, where it's like, had to almost fire a guy, get told about this problem that's like, big problem. Guy did something wrong. Guy really broke a rule. I have to explain to him in very confrontational terms how you are very, very close to getting fired. This is very much like a last warning kind of thing. And then I have to type up a thing where he signs and says that he understands that this is a last warning kind of thing and that this is a really big mistake that he made. And I have to like really impress upon him in person. I have to like look another human being in the eye and be like, you're really in a lot of trouble here. And I need very, very severe improvement of behavior. And it's like, do you understand how hard that is for me? That is really fucking hard for me to do that shit. And I have to really rile myself up to get into that headspace of being able to do that. And so then when I come out of that, when I come out of that conversation, I'm riled up. And then I had 4 shots of espresso. And dude, it was off to the races. I was so riled up. And then everything people come at me, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have had all that coffee afterwards. Because I was a very like direct person for the rest of that afternoon. And then there was this mistake I made. I think I'm going to talk honestly about this. Here's a mistake I made. We were really busy this one night at the restaurant. I'm going to speak openly about this, even though it's a mistake I made. We were really busy. So all the servers are running around. And I'm on the floor and I'm helping all of them. And they're all being freaking out. And they're being like, can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? Can you open a bottle of wine for me? And then one server is very, very busy. And he's like, can you help me open a bottle of wine? And he tells me the table number and he gives me the bottle of wine. And I don't know anything about this bottle of wine. I know the grape. I know the year. I know the name. We have 100 bottles of wine. I haven't actually studied all the full bottle list yet because there's a lot of things I've had to learn. So I don't have notes on all of it. And normally I will not approach the table without getting some notes on it. But here's the thing. I knew what table it was. I had interacted with them. We'd been so busy that we couldn't seat them immediately. They had like an 8 o'clock reservation. And at 8 o'clock, we didn't have a table for them because we were so busy. So we had to make them wait. And I think we bought them a free drink and they were chilling at the bar for a bit. And then we sat them. And here's the thing. I made the mistake that they were foreigners and they were really pretty. And they were pretty in this very specific Instagram way. And so I made the mistake of believing that they were shallow or like believing that they didn't know their shit. Because, or not that they need, what words am I allowed to use here? I thought that they were superficial people because they looked like superficial, really pretty Instagram girls. And they were foreigners. And so we're all rushing around and I'm given this bottle of wine and I'm supposed to serve it to them. And so I walk up there and they're speaking to each other in Russian. And so I just fast track it a little bit. We're in a rush. I don't do the fullest form of bottle service. Normally the way I like to do it is I like to do the basic presenting of the wine, which is you say the grape varietal, you say the year vintage, and you say the name of the wine. Those are like the 3 pieces of information that are totally key. You show it to the guest confirms that those are that this is the correct year and the correct wine, and then you open it, you have one person try it. The phrase I like to use is, please confirm for me that you're a fan, and then as there are time in between where you're waiting for them to confirm and you're pouring. And I like to fill that space with saying stuff about the wine because it's a lot of fun. You have to assume that if someone comes to a restaurant and spends $100 on a bottle of wine, they are a little bit interested in it. And they don't just want to blind taste a wine. And you have a much more interesting tasting experience if you're given a few pointers on what to expect. Look for the grapefruit. Look for the rind. Look for the minerality, crushed, you know, look for these flavors, whatever it is. And then you find those flavors much easier if you are prompted to look for them. So that's how I like to do it normally. And that's not how I did it here because I walk up to the table and they're speaking to each other in Russian. And so I just made this judgment call of not wanting to interrupt. So I just show them the bottle. And I ask who wants to try it, and I cut the foil and I open it. And I can hear them speaking about the wine in Russian, and they're throwing in words. I'm telling the story, and it's making me feel horrible. It's just a type of mistake that I'm really, I don't know. It's, I don't know. Anyway, so the point is that, you know, I present the wine like that and then like we're running around and I'm doing other shit and I'm trying to order liquor and stuff. And then 45 minutes later, the server comes up to me and he's like, they're really upset about how you presented the wine. All three of those girls are sommeliers and they were like, you just cut the foil and just did it. And they're very pissed off. And it's just like, I don't know. Something happened there. Like, I'm trying to build a brand with this team that I'm managing, and I'm trying to build my brand as something about not making mistakes or something, or like doing, not cutting corners. And it's like, there's something about this corner cutting. I don't know. Well, I will never make that mistake again. Or will I? I mean, part of it, there's one angle of it, which is like, don't judge a book by its cover just because someone looks like an Instagram Christmas girl, like they've been hanging out on Sugar Baby Reddit in Russian. You know, just because they look like that doesn't mean that they don't know their shit. And it's like, yes, I will never make that mistake again. There's a separate mistake, though, that in my defense, it's like sometimes you have to make a judgment call when people are talking. Like when you deliver a dish at the Lark, we want them to name three components. There's a drop line that you're allowed. There's a drop line, meaning like there's a phrase that you use to describe the dish when you deliver it. And you're allowed to edit that drop line a little bit as long as you keep it to like, you have to mention three components of the dish so that the guest knows what's going on, so that they can enjoy it in an informed way, so that they don't just get mystery food at their table. It's a whole thing. It's very important. But at the same time, if you show up and they're deep in very serious conversation and you're going to fully interrupt, then sometimes we might give them a Brussels sprout in silence. If it sounds like it would do more harm in that moment, you're absolutely allowed to exercise a little bit of judgment. And in this moment, I show up there with a bottle of wine and they're speaking Russian. And I was under the impression that they didn't even speak a lot of English because they seemed to not speak a lot of English until later. And now they speak perfect English. Now when they're pissed off, they speak perfect English, which is such a... There's something about the language thing that's actually also devastating to me because it's just so like humiliating. To misunderstand that part about someone, to be like assuming that someone doesn't speak English and then they humiliate you in perfect English. There's something there that's also like really emotionally difficult. And then I don't know, I just get on this thing sometimes where I'm on tilt, where I had all these emotionally difficult things where I just get stressed out and there's a lot of conflict and I have to handle a lot of conflict. And so then when I'm presented with more difficult, tense questions where people don't agree and I have to step in and I have to be the referee, I'm just so riled up from other conflicts that I handle it worse, that I sort of choose violence, you know? I don't choose peace. And I end up just like, I end up just adopting a tone that isn't really the tone I want to adopt. And it's simply because I'm like slave to a cortisol and adrenaline level that isn't the most diplomatic level. And it's just so hard. It's like everything else, you know, it's like the money and mood thing. It doesn't really matter if I tell myself, hey, the fact that I got a $55 parking ticket doesn't actually mean that the world sucks, but it still feels like the world sucks. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. We just have to come up with the tools. The tools are not just to tell yourself what's going on. The tools have to be something more, you know? Like when you're agitated and someone is asking you to deal with something and you're about to deal with it in an agitated way, you have to have some sort of tool to calm down before you start dealing with the thing. Because there was more conflicts that night and I just like handled it poorly and then I go home and then I just ruminate on how I handled and it's not like I handled it super poorly. I'm a very hard judge of my own work. And then the next day I like followed up with everyone and like debriefed with everyone and was like, look, I didn't exactly like how I handled that and I thought about it more and I think the solution is kind of like this. And then they come at me all human. The day after was actually a really nice day because I debriefed with a lot of people about a lot of difficult things we had dealt with. And then when I do that, when I hit them up and I'm like, listen, I thought more about that thing we talked about. I think I came off as a little bit too agitated. I think my solution was a little bit dismissive of certain perspectives. And I think that there's a different solution that maybe could incorporate everyone's perspective a little bit like this so we get the best results. And then they respond and say, yeah, actually, I was thinking about it too, revealing that they also ruminated on it, which makes me feel so much less lonely. The fact that they also ruminated on it makes me feel like we're all a little bit the same in a nice way. Anyway, let me change topic. I'm changing topics to something else. So video games, because I've these are all the things a white guy who starts a podcast shouldn't talk about. Rappers, AI, video games. I'm gonna hit all three in one episode, okay? So when 20 years ago when I was a kid, when I was like 13, I remember having these feelings of like, I would play video games. I would be so into the video game and I'd be like in seventh grade or sixth grade or something. And I'd be in school and my whole body was just like pulling towards home. Like I couldn't pay attention to anything because I just wanted to go home and play the video game more. And it was like my brain state was just glued to this one idea, this one construct of the video game in my brain. Like I could not separate my brain from this one. I just could only think about video games. And it's weird to say, okay, so then I grew a little bit older and realized, oh, it's actually not that good to just play video games all the time. So then I'm in eighth grade or ninth grade and I'm like, oh, we got to stop playing so many video games because you play hella video games for 3 days and then you come out of it and you feel horrible. And it's a mix of like your body feels horrible because you've been so sedentary and also you've produced nothing in the real world, which is horrible. And then you sort of hate yourself and you regret it. And it's a bad feeling and you want to avoid that feeling. So I stopped playing video games. And it's weird to say, but I have to admit that at you get to a certain point of, I actually miss just being really into something is a wonderful feeling. So that feeling I had in sixth grade of being obsessed with something, and the something is ultimately a piece of art, whatever you want to call it. It's like, it's a piece of media, it's a piece of culture, and being deeply, deeply obsessed with and excited by a piece of culture is ultimately like an incredibly pleasant state. Now, it borders on addiction. It borders on all of these things of like, when you're too obsessed with it, things get a little bit dicey, but it's nice to be fucking into something. And I've spent most of my 30s, especially since getting sober, I've spent a lot of my 30s there not having stuff that I'm that into. And I got sober and I wrote a novel, and that was a thing that I was like completely consumed by, partly because the process was so difficult of holding the whole thing in my brain in a useful way and getting it to where I wanted it and being a perfectionist with it and getting it better. But then after I finished a novel, there's been a certain emptiness, and at times I've tried to get myself into stuff and I've failed to get into stuff. And I'm happy to report that I have broken through. I'm really into a video game right now, and I'm actually happy about it. It's a video game that I bought years ago. And look, real stuff that's like high-level good culture, real pieces of art, like real masterpieces, are difficult to get into in general. The analogy or the example that my brain always comes up with is The Godfather, the movie, the trilogy, The Godfather. Because I had this weird experience of, I watched The Godfather, the first movie. I watched the whole fucking thing. I thought it was so boring. But I was like, it's number one on everyone's list. It's number one on the fucking IMDb best movies ever list that the most people get to vote on. So there must be something there. So I watched it again 3 years later. And I was still like, this is just so boring. And then 3 years later again, I watched it a third time and I'm bored by it. And then for some reason, the fourth time, probably 10 years after watching it the first time, I just was in the right mood. I was in a slower mood. I was in a slightly sadder mood. I was just in this very receptive, open-hearted. Slowness is really the key, though, because it's a slow movie that's very atmospheric. And I was just in this slow move where I was ready to receive something that was mostly a slow atmosphere that was like deeply beautiful. And I watched the movie a fourth time and it just clicked and I just got it. And I just had this like deep experience with this movie. And I find it so fascinating that I've literally watched the whole thing three times already, been bored by it, didn't connect with it, and now I'm connecting with it. It's like, I think I've talked about that on the podcast 10 times, but I just think it's the most interesting thing in the whole universe. And so there's this video game. It's called Cyberpunk 2077. It's based on this board game from the 80s invented by this black guy from California about just a future. Well, first of all, it's a funny thing that in the 80s he made a board game called Cyberpunk, and then a year later he made a sequel called Cyberpunk 2020, because he figured in the year 2020, which is an inconceivably far off date and year, 2020 is so far into the future from his 1980s mind that I can't even conceive of it. And in 2020, we will be living in an incredibly futuristic world. And maybe we kind of are. The thing about it is, that our futuristic world is maybe more about the weird fringe cases of what will AI do to world politics, and it's less about the amount of neon. But so it's a very neon-drenched cityscape where like Los Angeles and Tokyo are smashed together. Anyway, so the video game that came out in 2020, it's funny that it actually came out in 2020. The video game that came out in 2020 is based on the board game from the 80s. And the video game is like, it's a fucking masterpiece. It's one of the most expensive video games ever made. It's just this vast, interesting looking city where you, at every turn, you just see the shapes of stuff. And so much of it is a technical masterpiece of like the way the neon skyscrapers reflect in the puddles of rainwater on the street is incredibly beautiful. And the way there's like weird broken plastic drapes that you can look through, and the way stuff look through the warped through the plastic, it's so photorealistic and so beautiful. And the way everything moves, and the way you can interact with everything, and the way you can drive a car really, really fast, block after block after block, and getting the sense of like, this is a very, very large city. But if at any point you stop and you walk up to one of these like weird Japanese noodle stands, and everyone has like weird neon eyes and body parts that are missing and replaced with robot parts, because it's in a future world where everyone is upgraded. The game is incredibly visually and atmospherically beautiful. And the game has been out for 4 years, and I bought it probably 4 years ago, and I've tried to play it many times. And I never got into it. I could never get into it because I never had the slowness of heart. And then something clicked last week where I just had the slowness of heart enough to sit down and play it for many hours, actually, forcing myself to play it for many hours, being kind of bored, not really connecting with it. And then slowly, because it's complicated, it's big and it's vast and it's overwhelming. And like the system of how you upgrade your own body is very complicated. And it's hard to understand, and it's a little bit, you have to like really focus and study it a little bit to get into it. But once you get into it, it's you get into it. And then now I'm like happy to report that I'm in this state of mind of like, I want to just stop recording this episode of the podcast so I can go back to playing it. I just want to do the next thing, and I want to just like explore the next thing, because the characters are so incredibly interesting. And look, video games are so hard to make interesting. And, you know, the Grand Theft Auto 5 is this game that people think is an incredible masterpiece. But I never managed to get into it. I tried many times, and it just felt like all these, you just play this game where you can steal any car, and every mission you get is just find this guy and kill him, or drive this car and catch up to this other car. And it just feels very like mechanical and uninteresting, because ultimately what I'm looking for is like storytelling. And then now I've finally got into this Cyberpunk 2077 game, and it's like the characters, like, there's just such a depth of, there's such a variety of stuff going on, and it feels so vastly big. And then you walk in between two buildings, and you like find a stairway that takes you down to some night market that's like basement level, but there's a little bit of sunlight trickling down, and there's neon everywhere, and everyone has these cool robot-y body parts, and there are all these vendors selling different stuff, and you can talk to every single person, and then you start talking to them, and they have these like weird ideas. Like, you start talking to a guy, and he's a monk, and he's crying, and you're like, what's going on with you? And he's like, well, I was kidnapped, and it's against my belief to modify my body with robotics. It's against my Buddhist belief to modify my body with robotics, but these gangsters, they thought it'd be funny. So now I have these robot eyes, and he has all these sockets, these like electronic plugs all over his body, and one of his arms is replaced with a robot arm, and he's crying, and he's like, it is against my belief to have these things, but they put them on me anyway. And I have a twin brother, and they kidnapped him, and they're gonna give him a robot arm. And then you have this option of saying, hey, I'll go find your brother and I'll stop them so his body isn't desecrated in a way that's against his belief. But then he's like, yeah, but don't hurt them, because it is actually way more against my belief to ask you to hurt someone. I would rather sacrifice my brother than to have you go over there and kill a bunch of gangsters. Even though those people are criminals and they do bad things, we still should not hurt them. And it's just like this weird, what is this ethical dilemma you present me with here? And then I went over there and I killed all those guys and I saved the monk before they gave him any robotic arms. And I was like, and he just was crying because he was like, this is not worth it. You killed all those people. And then I Googled it and I was like, is this bad? Like, did I just do something bad? Is this going to have some butterfly effect on the whole game where like now I made some enemy with the gods? Because there are all these different outcomes with all the different choices that you make, and it's all just so like complicated. And in the end, I was like, nah, it seems all right. It seems all right. The monk doesn't have any power. He's sad, but I did my best, you know? But so the point is that I'm finally, I broke through and I'm in this state where there's something I want to do. And it's just so comfortable, actually. It's so much more comfortable to have something you want to do. It's related to the secondary question of, do I feel guilty that this is what I want to do? And so there we have all these complicated constructs about what we believe of how we should spend our time. And like, you might think that video games is a shitty way to spend your time. And I have all these thoughts about that and all these caveats where it's like, yes, all these video games where you go online and you shoot a gun with your friends and you can play them forever, and it's two teams and you shoot each other and now you won and next time your buddy wins and the next time you win. Like, those games without a storytelling element, those games without a narrative, I do feel like you can play them forever and you can play them for 3 days straight. And when I come out of that, I haven't actually done that since I was 13, but I'm sure it's a lot of fun. And then when you come out of it after 3 days of doing it, I would surely feel very bad. I would feel very empty. Whereas when I designate a thing like this that has like a powerful, beautiful storytelling masterpiece component to it, then I feel pretty good about it afterwards. And it's so weird. Video games have such a bad reputation, and we don't have, like there are these movies that people love, and then the people, the person who wrote the script gets so much credit, and the director gets so much credit, and the actor gets so much credit. And then you have these video games like Cyberpunk 2077, where it's like, I think the script is very interesting, but it's not one script, and it's an entire city of thousands of characters that all have these like dialogue trees that you can explore. And I don't know who wrote it. And I was out there yesterday trying to Google it. And it's like, yeah, the game was kind of made by this company started by these two Polish guys. It's a Polish company, which I'm also like interested in, like, how is it a Polish company where it's this like warped version of Los Angeles mixed with Tokyo? It's all so confusing. But video games don't get a lot of credit, and I don't even know who... There's no way for me to find out who even wrote these incredible dialogues that are so, like, interesting. You know? I was just, like, in this city, and I'm exploring, and I just, like, find this, like, abandoned motel with all these computers in it, and you can read all the logs of all the guests that have stayed in the hotel, and there's some puzzle there of trying to get into some room, but it's like totally unclear what the goal is. I'm just in an abandoned motel, and there are all these computers with data on different guests that have stayed there, and there are all these locked doors, and I don't know how to unlock the doors. And then I find an elevator that brings me up to the roof of the skyscraper, and I look out over this like shiny, beautiful neon nighttime city that has all these like weird shapes and all these things. Really, that here's a really micro way of describing what the best feeling is. The best feeling is when you see something in the distance and you don't know what it is, but it has an interesting shape. So you want to go towards it, and you want to see it up close, and you want to explore it. Like, that's the best feeling of just, and that of just wanting to explore. Like, that's what exploration in great video games is. It's what Breath of the Wild did the best of any game. It's like the Zelda game. They did it so well. You parasail through this world, paraglide through this world, and then you see stuff in the distance, and it's just like a weird, odd shape that sticks out in nature. You're looking out over a forest, and there's like a rock formation or a purple thing that has like a weird shape, and then you go closer to it, and it just gets more and more interesting the closer you get. And then other video games, it's like you stand on a hill, and you, especially these space ones, because they have all these space games where they're infinitely large, and you have procedurally generated planets, meaning that each person's, how do I even explain that? You know what it means. It's like each person's playthrough is different because there's just a rules set up for how the computer will generate a planet for you. And so you go to a planet, and the whole planet is computer generated according to certain rules and principles, and then you explore it, and the whole thing is so boring and empty because it's just an empty landscape. And the landscape is like a little bit beautiful in the first 5 minutes, but there's nothing to explore because no human inserted anything interesting or anything surprising. And I'm not saying that a computer will not one day be able to invent a world that's interesting to explore. I'm just saying we're not there yet. Because those games where there's like they boast that the game has 100,000 planets that are procedurally generated, it misses the point completely, because you look out over this landscape and there's nothing there that you look at that you want to explore. And so here in Cyberpunk, I'm like, I take an elevator up to the roof of the skyscraper, and I'm looking out, and there's so many things I'm looking around and seeing that I want to explore. And then I hear all these voices, and I go off to the side, and there's like two people just having a fist fight. And it seems like it's some sort of, and there's an audience, and it seems like it's some sort of betting thing. And then it's like, I start talking to them, and I discover that they're twins. I don't know. This is not that interesting, but it's just the last thing that happened to me before I stopped playing. They're twins who decided to merge their minds so that they're one person with two bodies. And then we just have a long conversation about it, where they try to flesh out what that would mean. What does it mean for one person to have two bodies? And then you have a fist fight with them, and you win a little bit of money. Anyway, There was something very difficult about this episode. I think this episode is over. I think I have to just call it. There was something very difficult about this. It shouldn't be this difficult. I have to change something here. Why was this so difficult? There's something about the daytime. There's something about there's people outside of my window. There's something about feeling alone. I need to feel alone. Anyway, thank you for listening. I love you, and I don't know. I don't know what it is I'm trying to do here. Should I just say interesting things? One interesting thing that happened this week is, like, there's a server at work. His name is Zach, and he has all these tables, and he's small talking with his tables, and he's a singer, and next week he has a show at the museum, and it's a $5 cover charge, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to listen to him sing. And he's telling his tables that he's a singer. And he's trying to make it work. You know, he's trying to be a famous singer. And I'm sure he has never told me that, but I'm sure that's the case. Because that's the case for everyone, you know? We're in Hollywood, bro. And then he's telling this table that he's a singer. And the lady is like, oh, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. My daughter is a singer, too. And he's like, oh, okay, what kind of stuff does she sing? And the girl goes, yeah, my daughter's Katy Perry. I think that's so funny. Because there's something so humiliating about that. There's something humiliating about being small and being confronted with big. And I don't know, it's not obvious to me why that's humiliating, but it is humiliating. There's something humiliating about using the same word for yourself. Like Zach using that word for himself, singer. And then having the same word be used for Katy Perry. There's something humiliating about putting yourself in the same category as someone who is so much more successful than you. But it's not obvious why that's humiliating. I don't know that it should be, but it is. Anyway, whatever. I can't do this anymore. I'm giving up. I love you guys.